Today's shir is Masecht Bava Kama, Daf Chof, and we will begin on Daf Chof, Amar Aleph, on top of the Amid. Says the Gemara, Hu Barcha the Chozel lift up Pum the Dono. There was a goat that saw a turnip on top of the barrel, Sarach Solit, and it climbed up to the top of the barrel to get that turnip. Achla lift up, and in doing so, it ate the turnip, the Tavir the Dono, and broke the barrel. Says the Gemara, Chayve Rava Alifta Vadona Nozik Shalom. Rava said that the owner of the goat was responsible for Nozik Shalom, both for the turnip and for the barrel. So the question that comes up is that we could understand that it's Chayv Nozik Shalom for the turnip. It's a case of Shein, eating something B'shus HaNezik. But why is he Chayv for breaking the barrel? My Tama, says the Gemara. Kiven the Urchel Mecha Lifta. Since it's normal for a goat to eat turnip, it also is considered normal that if the turnip is on top of a barrel, the goat is going to climb onto that barrel to get the turnip, and therefore both the barrel and the turnip are considered to be a situation of shame. Says the Gemara, Amit Ilfa. We have a situation where there's an animal in the Rishus Rabbim. It stuck out its neck and ate food that was on tap on the back of another animal. The halacha is chayevus. And of course it's difficult to understand, because as we have been learning, this is a situation of shame. And shame is pot the Rishus Rabbim. So why over here is he chayev? My tama, says the Gemara, Gabi Chaverta Kichatza Nizik Dami. The back of the animal that it ate the food off is considered like Chatzar Nizik. And Chatzar Nizik, there is an obligation for Shein. Says the Gemara, Lame Messiah, let's prove this. The Brisa speaks about a person who had a knapsack on his back, or Pashta Tzavar of Ochl Mimeno, and the animal stretches out its neck and eats food that is in the knapsack. The halacha is chayeves, yechayev, it's considered shein. But again, the person is standing in Rishus HaRabim. So why is there an obligation for shein? Answers the Gemara, it's not a proof, because they're referring to a situation of kofetzes, where the animal jumped on top of the other animal. Hachanami, kofetzes, it jumped. And since it jumped, so there's a machlokes rishonim how to understand the Gemara. Rashi understands that because one animal, the animal that ate the food, jumped on top of the other animal, and that's not the normal way for it to jump and put itself into that other animal, it becomes a situation of Karen, of an abnormal hezek, and Karen, we know, is chayiv even in Rosh Hashanah. Other Rishonim, however, say that since the animal jumped to get to the knapsack, so it becomes a situation of Chatzar HaNizik. The knapsack is considered the Chatzar HaNizik, and therefore it's Chayiv. So if, asked the Mefarshim, because it's in my knapsack, it's considered Chatzar HaNizik, so what's the difference if it jumped or it didn't jump? So Mefarshim explained that if to get to it, it has the animal to get to the food has to jump. So that shows that it's in a separate area, and that's why it's considered that it's a chatzar nizik. If he could easily access the food, it won't be considered chatzar nizik. Says the Gemara, "Vehechi itma de Rava." Regarding what did Rava make this remark? Says the Gemara, "Ahad amar Rabbi Yishe." He's referring to what Rabbi Yishe said. It says, "Behem b'shus rabim." If there's an animal in Shusarabim, Holchav Ochla, and it goes and eats food in the Shusarabim, Daloch is, Ptura, it's Potter. Because, as we've learning, there is no Shein for Shusarabim. However, Omdav Ochla, if the animal just stands in the Shusarabim, Chayavis. Ask the Gemara, Mashna Holcha, why, if it's walking and eating, are we saying it's not Chayiv? Because the Urchehu, it's a normal act, and a normal act is not chayiv in Rosh Hashanah. Ask the Gemara, Amdanami Yorchehu. An animal to stand in Rosh Hashanah is also a normal act. So why are we differentiating between the animal walking or standing? Rava says, Rava, when it says Amda, it doesn't mean that it just stood still. It means Kofetzes. And again, following Rashi's Pshat, since Kofetzes is an abnormal situation, it becomes, it falls into the category of Keren. And Keren, we know, is Chayiv even in the Shus Rabbin. Ask the Gemara, Boy Reb Zera, Mizgalga Mahu, if food is rolling, what is the halacha? And first we'll explain the Gemara's question the way Rashi explains the Gemara. Hey Chidami, exactly what is the Gemara's question? It says the Gemara, Kagoin the Kaima Omer B'Rishus HaYochid. The straw is in the Rishus HaYochid. However, it's rolling from the Rishus HaYochid to the Rishus Rabin. And the question of the Gemara, as Rashi explains, is how do we view it? Do we view it as from where the animal took the straw? And since the animal took the straw from the Rishus HaNizik, it will be a situation of Keren, of Shein, because there is Shein in Rishus HaNizik. Or do we follow the place where he actually ate it in the Rishus HaRabim? And since he ate it in the Rishus HaRabim, there is no obligation for Shein. And Rashi says, the same question that the Gemara is asking, it could have been asked the other way around, that the food is rolling from the Rishus HaRabim to the Rishus HaYochid, and the same question would apply. Do we follow where the food was initially, or do we follow where he actually ate the food? Taisus, however, disagrees with Rashi's pshat, because Taisus says that the halacha is certainly that we follow the place where the food was actually eaten, not where the food came from. And therefore, Taisus' explanation in the Gemara is in a situation where the food was rolling from the Rishus HaNizik to the Rishus HaRabim, but the reason that it's prevented from actually entering into the Rishus HaRabim is because of the mouth of the animal. Do we say that this is considered Shein Rishus HaRabim because the thing would have ultimately ended up in the Rishus HaRabim? Or do we say that since he ate it in the Rishus HaYochid, we say that this is a situation of Shein Rishus HaNizik? Toshma. So the Gemara attempts to bring a proof from the following braisa. The Tanya of Chia Masu, if there's a load of food, Miktsos B'Fnim or Miktsos B'Chutz, part of it is in the Rishus HaNizik and part of it is in the Rishus HaRabim. Och B'Fnim, what was eaten in the Rishus HaNizik, Chayeves, there's a Chia for. Och B'Chutz, what was eaten in the Rishus HaRabim Potter. My love, isn't this braisa referring, says the Gemara, to the case of Megalgal V'Asi? And we see that we determine the place where that the determination is based on the place where the animal actually ate the food. Says the Gemara Loi. That's not the case. The case is Eima Ochla Masha B'Fnim Chayevis Amasha B'Chutz Petura. What the Braisa is saying is no matter where she eats the food, perhaps what the Braisa means to say is, if the food was initially in the Rishus HaNizik, even if it's animals eating it, Rishus HaRabim, you'll be Chayiv. And vice versa, if the food was initially in the Rishus HaRabim, even when the animal is eating it, it's already in the Rishus HaNizik, the halacha will be Potter. So if anything, the Braisa might be just telling us the opposite. Another way of understanding the Braisa, Ibai Seima, this Braisa, says the Gemara, is referring Kikam Reb Chia, the Psila d'Aspasa. We're speaking about a load of Aspasa. Aspasa, unlike other grain, are long strands of food, a long strand of this of a stalk. And this is what the Braisa is referring to. And Rashi says that what Reb Chia is teaching us, that since we have these long stalks, partially Rishus HaNizik, partially Brishus HaRabim, teaches us the Braisa. We can't follow the place of the stalk. What we do is we follow the place of the animal. If the animal is standing Brishus HaNizik, even though part of the stalk was Brishus HaRabim, there will be a Chiyuv for shame. And if the animal standing Brishus HaRabim, even though part of the stalk is in the Rishus HaNizik, there will be no obligation for shame. That's how Rashi explains the Gemara. Other Rishonim say that to completely ignore, the Miri says this pshat, to completely ignore where the stalks are and just look at where the animal is standing is not what the Braisa means to say. And we also have to take into consideration, says the Miri, where the majority of the stalk is. If certainly if the majority of the stalk is in Rishus HaRabim, even though part of it is in the Rishus HaNizik, and the animal standing in Rishus HaNizik, we still will not be able to obligate the owner for obligation of shame. The Mishnah said, if the animal ate clothing, achla ksus, if the animal ate ksus or kalim, Mishalom Chatzi Nezek. The Mishnah continued to say, the Medvar Mamurim, Brishus HaNizik, Al Brishus HaRab Potter. So the Mishnah distinguished between the Brishus HaNizik and the Brishus HaRab. So the Gemara wants to know regarding what situation does the Mishnah make this difference, this distinction between Brishus HaRabim and Brishus HaNizik. Ahai, regarding which case? Amirav, Akula. Both cases the Mishnah spoke about. The case where the animal ate fruits or vegetables, or the case where the animal ate ksus for kalim. In both cases, says Rav, if it happens in the Rishus HaRabim, he's potter. Now the question is, my Tama. We could understand, say the Rishonim, that if the animal ate fruits or vegetables, Rishus HaRabim, so it's a case of shame. And as we've been learning, there is no obligation for shame in the Rishus HaRabim, and that's why the Mishnah said it's potter. But in the case where the animal ate ksus or kalim, which is certainly an abnormal activity, and therefore falls under the category of keren, the halach ought to be that in Rishus HaRabim, he's chayiv. Because as we've been learning, the obligation for Karen extends into the Rishus HaRabim. My Tama, why when he ate the Ksus for Kalim and the Rishus HaRabim is there an exemption? Answers the Gemara, Kala Mishana, Uba Ach Mishinaba, if somebody did something irregular, leaving Ksus for Kalim and the Rishus HaRabim, and now somebody continued doing something irregular, potter. And therefore, the owner of this ksus for kalim, who put these items into the Rishus HaRabim, did something irregular, there can no longer be any chiyuv for mazik in this case. And in fact, the Birkei Shmuel and the Chazanis say that the exemption is so strong that it's not pshat that he's a mazik, but the Torah doesn't obligate him to pay. Bez Din can't force him to pay. Rather, they explain that this is not considered, according to this explanation, an act of hezek, an act of damages at all. The Shmuel Amar, Lo Yishana El Peiros V'Yirokos. Yes, if somebody left Peiros V'Yirokos in the Rishus HaRabim, an animal ate them, it would be a case of shame, and there is no obligation for shame, Rishus HaRabim. Av Ksus V'Kalim fall under the category of Karen and Chayeves. As the Gemara, the Chen Amar Shlokish Akula. Shlokish also says that the Mishnah's qualification that distinguishes between Rishus HaRabim and Rishus HaNizik refers to all situations. Vaz the Shlokish Latamei, and Shlokish is following his opinion. Dom Shlokish, Shtei Paros Rishus HaRabim. If there are two cows in Rishus HaRabim, Achas Revutz of Achs Malachas. One is squatting and one is walking. If the walker kicked the squatter, even though it's an act of keren, which normally one is chayiv for and rishus rabim, ptura. It's still potter. Why? Because, as Rav just taught us, since an animal squatting in the rishus rabim is abnormal, so the second cow that acted irregularly by kicking it is not chayiv because it falls under the rule of kala mishana or ba achav shina ba potter. However, revutzu b'maleches, if the squatter kicked the walker, then chayevus, because that's a regular case of keren, and therefore there's a chayev for chatzin nezek. Rabbi Yochanan, however, holds like Shmuel, and he says loishan al peyus v'irakus. Only by peyus v'irakus, if the animal ate them in the rishus harabim, is he potter. Av sus v'kelim chayevus. Says the Gemara, if we're saying the Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan are arguing, should we say that they're also arguing regarding the case that Rish Lakish discussed of the two animals? Lame Rabbi Yochanan less like Rish Lakish, I feel b'shtei paros, that he won't agree with that case, because since Rabbi Yochanan is teaching us that even if you eat sus v'kelim and the shus harabim, yuchayiv. So it's obvious that Rabbi Yochanan does not subscribe to the concept of Kol Mishana or Barach of a Shinaba. And therefore, even in a case where the Maleches kicks the Revutza, Rabbi Yochanan will hold it's a situation of Keren and he'll be Chayiv. Says the Gemara, Loi. Regarding this halacha, Loi Lam Islay, Rabbi Yochanan could agree with Shlokish, because this case is not similar to the rules that are being set forth in our Mishnah. Because, says Rabbi Yochanan, Ksus abdi inchi deman chaglimi umatvchi. There are times that people leave their clothing in the Rishus HaRabim. And therefore, by putting it down, we're not saying that the person who put it down acted irregularly, that we should apply the concept of Kala Mishana or Ba'ach V'Shinaba. Nothing irregular happened. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan will say that it's potter. However, Behema Lavorcha, it's not normal for an animal to squat down in the middle of Rishus HaRabim. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is also agreeing to the concept of Kala Mishana or Ba'ach V'Shinaba, and that concept is applicable in this situation, and therefore he will agree with Reish Lakish. So, in other words, what the Gemara is saying is that the machloikis between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is not a machloikis in din. They both subscribe to the concept of kala mishana or ba'ach v'shinaba. The machloikis is strictly what is the, if somebody puts sus v'kelim in the rishus harabim, is that considered irregular or not? Vimnenis, we learned that if somebody, that there isn't, as we've been learning, there is no obligation for shame in the Rishus HaRabim. But even though there is no obligation for shame in Rishus HaRabim, if the animal ate in the Rishus HaRabim, the owner has to pay what he benefited. He doesn't have to give his animal dinner that night. Comma, how do we make the evaluation of how much the owner benefited? Says the Gemara, Rav Amar d'Amar. We view it as straw, because normally that's what the owner feeds his animal. So even though the animal ate barley, and even if the owner, usually says the Rishonim, does give his animal barley, he could say, as far as I'm concerned, the animal should eat the straw, and that's what I would have given it, and that's the extent of the benefit I had. Rav Amar d'Amar b'Zal. We have to value barley, but we have to look at barley when it's less expensive. Rashi says, how do we make that evaluation? It's 2/3 of the price. In other words, if barley is going for $1 a pound, he has to give 2/3 of that price. That's how Rashi learns. Other Rishonim say that it's hard to make a hard rule that it's always valuated at a third discount. We have to look at the situation and the value of the commodity. Says the Gemara, Tanya Kavosai the Rabba, and Tanya Kavosai the Rava. There's a Braisa that corroborates Rabba's Pshat, and there's a Braisa that corroborates Rava's opinion. Tanya Kavosai the Rabba. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Aim Shalamas El Demei Amru Vad. We evaluate as if he would have served his animal straw. Tanya Kavosai the Rava. Im Nenis, Mishalamas Masha Nenis. If it benefited, you have to pay for what it benefited. Ketzer. Echlo Kava Kavayim. If the animal ate one or two calf, we don't say that he pays the full value. How much a person would be willing to pay to have his animal fed with this, with barley. Even at some, but it has to be something that is appropriate for an animal. Even though the owner does not normally feed his animal this food. Lefikach, ach lechitna dovar ralo, but if it ate something that's grain, wheat, or anything else that's not good for the animal, there aloch is ptura. Because we ignore, say the Rishonim, the fact that he ate an expensive item, because this expensive item is bad for her. And it's not considered a situation of shame, rather a situation of Karen, However, if she ate something that's beneficial to her, then we evaluate what she ate and we pay it Sirim Bezol. There's a machloikis harishonim. How do we evaluate this? Let's say the animal ate more than it would need to eat, or and had already eaten and really doesn't need to eat again. Do we still pay or not? Some Rishonim say we only pay as much as it would have normally eaten, or if it ate already, we don't pay at all. Other Rishonim say we take this discount, but we pay for the amount that it ate. There's an interesting approach that the Rambam makes. The Rambam says, if the animal does normally eat barley, then we have to pay for all the barley it ate. If an animal doesn't normally eat barley, we only pay for as much as it normally eats, the volume that it eats normally for its meal. Amalei Rav Chisda Ram V'chama. Rav Chisda said to Ram V'chama, Lo havas gabon be'urta b'tchuma. You were not, it's terrible that you weren't within our tchum. We know in Shabbos, one is not allowed to go out of the tchum, and he, Rabbi Vachama, was outside the tchum, where Rav Chisda was. So it's a shame that we couldn't get together to talk and learning. Another pshat, Rav Chisda is referring to the Beis HaMedrash, that we know in those times the Bati Medrash were outside of the city, and he said because you weren't within the tchum that you could come to the Beis HaMedrash. The Ba'ilam Milim Ayasa, we spoke about a very interesting topic of learning, and you missed the Shia. Amra, my Milim Ayasa, Sram Bacham said, what was such a Geshmak Shia? Amalek. So we begin the Shia of Zen Nena Vzeloi Chosu. Hadoba Chatzar Chaverish Lemidatoi. If somebody is living in someone else's property without the knowledge of the landlord, does he have to pay rent or not? Ask the Gemara, and as the Rishonim point out, a very big machloikis Tosfos and the Muke Yosef, our Gemara is referring to a case of Shloime Dato. So it seems that our Gemara is referring to a situation where the landlord is not aware that I'm in his property. Were he aware that I'm in his property and he didn't say anything? It seems, and that's the opinion of many Rishonim, that they certainly can never make a claim for rent that he didn't receive. However, Tosfos says that even if he was aware and didn't say anything, if the halacha will be that he has a claim for the rent, the fact that he was aware of it and didn't ask for it doesn't change anything. In fact, the Trumas Hadeshin takes Tosfos' statement even
a step further. He says, he quotes a Rabbeinu Ephraim, that if somebody invites his friend for a meal, the invitation doesn't necessarily imply that the meal is free of charge. And therefore, if I invite somebody for a meal, I have a right to afterwards ask him for payment. And in fact, the Truman Sedeshin takes this a step further. He says that let's say when someone took a son-in-law and he agreed to support his son-in-law for 5 years, and after 5 years, the father-in-law continues to serve his son-in-law food, the father-in-law at any point can legally charge for the extra meals that the son-in-law ate in his house, even though he gave him the food all along, never asking him for payment. Still, the fact that I didn't ask for something and I was aware of it, like Tosfos teaches us, says the Truma Sedeshin, doesn't take away my right to ask for the payment. The Truma Sedeshin, however, does say he could only request payment for the food that the son-in-law ate, not for food that his daughter ate. Ask the Gemara, Heichi Dami, exactly what is the situation that you're asking your question about? Ilem b'chotz d'loy kaim of l'agra, v'gavra d'loy of l'meger, that we're referring to a situation that I'm not intending to rent, that the landlord is not intending to rent out the house, and the tenant doesn't normally pay rent. And as the Rishonim explained, what kind of situation is it that a tenant doesn't pay rent? It's referring to a situation where the tenant has a house of his own, that if he needed to, he could have lived there. Or it could be referring, say, some Rishon Rabbeinu Chananel, by a very distinguished person, that many people want him to be their tenant, want him to live by them, even free of charge. Ilayim b'chotz loy kaim la'agro, v'gavr d'loy ev l'meger. So this is a situation, zeloy nenev, zeloy chaser. The tenant is not really benefiting, because he wouldn't have paid rent anyway, and the owner is not losing anything because he wouldn't have collected rent anyway. Ella, it's referring to a case b'chotz the kaim la'agra, that normally the landlord rents this property out, the gavra David Lemeger, and the tenant usually pays rent. Says the Gemara, zeh nena, zeh chaser. The tenant is benefiting, the landlord is losing, and certainly this should be a case where he has to pay rent. Says the Gemara, Leitzrich b'chotza d'loy kaim l'agra. It's a property that the landlord normally doesn't rent out. However, gavra mutz avid l'meger. Usually this tenant does pay rent for the property that he lives in. Mai, what is the halacha? Mutz amalei, can the tenant say to the landlord, Mai chasaticha, I haven't caused you any loss because you wouldn't have collected rent anyway. A dilma matzi amar, or perhaps the owner could say to the tenant, that's nice, you benefited from me, and therefore, since you benefited from me, I am entitled to collect the rent. So the Rishonim point out that isn't this a situation of Kaifin al Midas Adoyim? If I wouldn't have collected anyway rent, why should I? This is what the people in Sodom did, that they demanded payment for something that they weren't entitled. And the halach is that kaifin al midas Sodom. So what's the havamina that I should be allowed to ask for rent? So the Rishonim discussed this at great length, and they say that the concept of the kaifin al midas Sodom is only after you're on the property, and I have nothing to lose by you being on the property because I wouldn't have collected rent anyway. There we say that we don't allow people to act in this way. However, here you're not on the property, and the question is, do I have to allow you to be on the property? Here we say that that's not a situation that we stop a person from acting that way. And in fact, I saw the Paiskim use this concept to discuss when do we say Kaifel Amidus Adoyim, when don't we say Kaifel Amidus Adoyim. A question that came up is as follows. There was a person who bought a new refrigerator, and there was no way for the refrigerator to get into his apartment. But the movers said that the doorway of his neighbor's apartment was wide enough for the refrigerator to be brought in, and then from the neighbor's apartment they could get into my apartment. Can I force my neighbor to allow the refrigerator in, or to allow it? A similar question, which comes up quite often, is that I want to do work on my home, but I have to put up scaffolds. Work is being done externally, and the scaffolds have to sit on my neighbor's property. Can my neighbor say, I don't allow it? So the Paiskim make a very interesting distinction. They say, in the case of the refrigerator, I can force my neighbor to allow my refrigerator in. He's nothing to lose, and it's a very short interval where this will take place. Kaifan al midas adoyim. On the other hand, to put up scaffolds on my neighbor's property that will be there for a while, that before the scaffolds are up, even though my neighbors really don't lose much by having those scaffolds up, my neighbors could prevent me from putting them up. Similarly, I saw the Paiskim discuss a question that comes up also. Somebody owned a newspaper stand, and people don't want to spend money on buying a newspaper. So what they do is they're really just interested in seeing the headlines. So they go by the newspaper stand and they look at the headlines. Can the owner of the newspaper stand say, I'm not agreeable to that? And they say, certainly, it's Koifer Amidus Sedoin. He has nothing to lose. The answer, as we said before, we don't apply the concept of Koifer Amidus Sedoin before it actually happened. Here, I don't have to allow you to come read my paper. I, the newspaper stand owner, don't have to allow that to happen. Tosis and other Rishonim point out that there's a fourth possibility that the Gemara doesn't address. And that is a situation where the premises are for rent, but the squatter normally doesn't pay rent. This is a case of Zeh Loinena V'Zeh Choser. The Gemara doesn't discuss that possibility. What is the halacha? So we have a machloikas rishonim. Tosfos says that since the owner's loss is not a direct loss, it's only a grumma, therefore certainly the owner is not entitled to claim the rent. The Rif disagrees, and the Rif says that even though it's a situation of grumma, certainly the owner has a right to say that I would have rented out this property and you being on the property causes me a loss, and he has a right to make that, and certainly has an enforceable monetary claim. The Paiskim also discussed different situations if they do or don't fall under the category, what category they fall into. One example is, let's say I own a property, but it was taken away from me. And it was taken away from me by Goyim, and the Goyim gave it to another Jew. Does the owner have a right, does the landlord have a right to go to that Jewish tenant and claim the rent? The Rishonim say that since this is certainly a situation of a property that's not up for rent, because I don't have control of the property, and therefore I have no claim on rent. Another case that the Rishonim discuss is, let's say I do want to rent this property, but the only person who's a potential tenant for this property is the person who's on the property. Says the Rishonim that because there is no other potential tenant, it falls under the category of Lekayim L'Agra, that it's not a rentable property and I have no claim. Another case that the Rishonim discuss is, let's say somebody prevented me from being able to rent my property out. he put up a fence or did something that prevents me from being able to rent my property. Tosfos and the Rosh both say that it's not considered that he actually made a hezek for me. It's only a grumma, and therefore I can't have any claim to that person. There are other Rishonim that dispute this opinion. There's a very interesting medrash. The medrash says that when Yaakov obtained the brachas from Yitzchak, the pasuk says, "Bo achicha b'mirma," and the medrash says, "Reb Yochanan Amar, bo b'chachmas tarasai." He came with the chachma of his Torah. The question is, what chachma of Torah did Yaakov Avinu use in receiving the brachas? Says Reb Shlomo Kluger that we know that Yitzchak told Esav to bring him meat before he'll give him the bracha. And of course Yitzchak told Esav to bring him kosher meat. But the Medrash teaches us that Esav of course had no intention to bother himself to find kosher meat. He was prepared to bring any meat that he found. Kosher, not kosher, doesn't make a difference. And he probably would have more likely found non-kosher meat. If he would have brought the non-kosher meat, since Yitzchak tied the bracha to that, the meat, there would have never been a bracha. So we have here a situation of Zenena, of Yaakov Avinu benefiting from the bracha, v'zelei chaser. Esav anyway would have not had anything from the bracha. And therefore, in the case of it falls into the case of Zenena, v'zelei chaser, that you certainly have no claim. That was the Chachma Tairasai that Yaakov Avinu exhibited here. So again, the Gemara's question is, what is the halacha in a case with Ze Chaser, Ze Nena, Vezeloi Chaser? Amalei Masnisani. So he said, that's a Mishnah. So Rav Chisda asked him, hey Masnisan, which Mishnah is it? Amalei Lechitishamishli. If you'll do something for me, personal for me, I'll tell you. Shakl Sudri Karachle. So Rav Chisda took Rami's scarf and folded it for him. Amalei, and the Mefarshim explained, why did he say this? So I saw a number of answers. Some say that he really was just saying it as a joke. He really didn't mean it. Others say is that he wanted Rav Chisda to become his Talmud. And once he becomes his Talmud, then he'll tell it to him. But why did he want him to become his Talmud in order that he should explain it, that he should tell him the answer? So Rav Shimon Shkop, in the introduction to the Shari Yosher, explains. He says that that he was going to explain to him, as we're about to begin learning the Gemara, something very difficult, which requires one to apply himself to understand it. When my Rebbe tells me something, and I respect my Rebbe, I will apply myself and try to understand it. However, if the person who's teaching me something is not really a person who I consider my Rebbe, is not really a person who I respect, I won't concentrate that well. And he wanted him to concentrate. And that's why he made Rav Chisda do something to show that he's a Talmud, to show that he respects what Rami Bachama has to say and will concentrate and give it the proper attention. The Pasukim also discuss around this Gemara the question, how could Rami Bachama allow Rav Chisda to do something on his behalf? We know that Rav Chisda was a Kohen, and one is not allowed to use a Kohen for personal service. So again, if we say that this entire Gemara doesn't really represent an act of work, it's not a question. Others say that from here we see that a Kohen, the Magen Avraham says this, that the Kohen has a right to be Moichel on his Kavod. Other Paiskim say that if the Kohen is benefiting from the act that he's doing, that's not considered a situation that the Kohen is serving, and therefore I could allow a kohen to work on my behalf. There's an approach from the Ksav Sofer that Rav Chisda was a Balmum, and since Rav Chisda was a Balmum, we don't have a concern of a kohen working on my behalf. And the Margolius Hashas has a very interesting approach. His approach is that really this Gemara doesn't mean that he was working on his behalf. What Rami Bachama was requesting from Rav Chisda was that Rav Chisda should give him smicha. And this was the opportunity. Rami Bachama said, here you'll see what a great Talmud Chacham I am, and I deserve smicha. Shakl Sudri Karachle, Rav Chisda took the scarf and folded him. Amalein, he said, our Mishnah said, Mishalemis Mashanenis. If the animal benefited from eating these items which normally he wouldn't eat, you have to pay for it. So we see, if somebody benefited, you have to pay. Amar Rabba, Kam Lecholav Lemargish Kam Gavad Mar Messiah. How much does a person who has Siyata Deshmaya not have to worry? Davgav Dloid Domil Masnisen had Rav Chisda really paid attention, he would see that our Mishnah is not the case that we're discussing, is not similar to the case of the Mishnah, still Kablumine. There's a beautiful vart that I saw from the Skver Rebbe. Kam lecholiv lo magush gavr demari saye. He says, many times, all of us live with tremendous siyat d'shmaya. But unfortunately, many of us are not smart enough to recognize the tremendous siyat d'shmaya that we have. Kam lecholi v'loi magish. It takes us to be choli. Sometimes we have to get sick. Sometimes we have to suffer to have our eyes open to realize that we have siyat d'shmaya. So why, says Rava, is this not similar to the Mishnah? Hai nana v'zeh choser. In the case of the Mishnah, this one is benefiting and this one is losing. Whereas in the case that we're discussing, and therefore the two cases are not similar. Says the Gemara, V'Rami Bachama. And what was Rami Bachama's thinking that he compared the case? So he says, Stam Peres Rishus Rabim Afguri Mafkalhu. By leaving fruit in the Rishus Rabim, the person realizes that they would have gotten destroyed anyway. And therefore, the cow that ate them has not caused the owner any loss. Tanan. So the Gemara tries to answer the question from a different Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Masechta Babasra, Hamakav Chaver Mishlosh Ruchosov. We have a situation where Shimon has a property, and Reuven has properties around Shimon's property. And he puts up a wall, the goddess Rishonim v'Sashnim v'Sashlishes. He puts up a fence around three sides. We cannot make Shimon, who's in the middle, participate in the cost of the fence. Horavius, but it seems that once he puts up the fourth side, Mechayvenosai. Shmamina, from here we see, Zen Nena, in a case where this one is benefiting, Vizela Chaser, and this one is not losing. The inner owner is benefiting that he's completely fenced, but the outer owner is not losing anything because he would have put up the fences anyway. The halacha is chayif. Says the Gemara, it's not a proof. Because Shani Hassam, Domele, at Garamtali, Hakefi Yisera. You caused me, the outer owner, to tell the inner person, you caused me the need to make a fence. Because if you weren't here, I could have made fences along the outside perimeter. Now that you're here, I'm sustaining a loss because of you. And therefore, it's a situation that the inner one is benefiting and the outer one is losing, and that's why the inner one has to participate in paying. Tashma. So Gemara tries to bring a different proof. Amr Rabbi Yosef. Im Amr Nikif, the goddess reveals, in a case where the person in the middle, well, I made the three fences around, and now he put up the fourth fence. Then Magagon Sokol, he has to participate in all of the fences that I put up. Tama, the god of Nikif, it's only when he himself put up the fourth fence, hamakif, but if I would have put up the fourth fence, if the outside person would have put on the fourth fence, then the inside person would be exempt from paying. Shema mina, because zeh nena, even though he's benefiting, bezeh loy chaser, I would have anyway put up the fences, potter. Says the Gemara, it's not a raya. Kushani hasam. When the outer one fences the fourth side himself, the inner person could say to him, you know why I don't have to participate? You put up a stone fence. But for me, Sagalim and the Tir Berazuza, I would have been satisfied with a cheap fence. That's why, unless the person himself puts up the stone fence, we can't have a claim that he should have to participate. This Mishnah is used to teach a Gemara, to explain a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says in Perek Dalet of Pirkei Avos, Akarcha Atenoitzer, Akarcha Atenoilet, you're created, you're born, Akarcha Atechai, Vakarcha Atemeis, Vakarcha Ateosed Litin Din Vechesbin Lefnei Melech Malchem Malchem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the question that the Gra asks, if everything is done Akarcha against my will, so why do I have to give Din V'cheshbon? I should only have to give Din V'cheshbon if I'm not forced to do it. But if I'm forced, why do I have to give Din V'cheshbon? He says, shouldn't this be similar to a case where I forced a person to do a job that the person said he's not qualified to do? And I forced him to do it anyway. And he taka doesn't do it properly. I have no right to have a claim to him. Says the Gra. The Mishnah is referring to the case over here. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos is connected to the Mishnah Masechta Bava Basra. He says that our Mishnah taught us now that if somebody put up three fences around my property, I don't have to pay. If I, however, go and put up the fourth fence, that's a proof that I am satisfied with these fences, and I have to even participate in the payment of the first three fences that were erected. Says the Gra, that's what the Mishnah is saying. We don't have a choice. And therefore, since we don't have a choice, we shouldn't be held responsible. However, we see that we're happy. It's not akarcha. Does anybody want to die? Doesn't everybody do everything to stay alive? That's the proof that I'm satisfied, and I can't say that I did it by force, and therefore I'm responsible. That's why I will have to give a din v'cheshbon for everything I did, and I can't say that I was forced. So the story goes that when they were discussing this story, when the Gra said this vart, the Dubna Magid was there. And the Dubna Magid, as we know, always said a mashal. So he said a mashal to explain this concept that the Gra says. He says, there was once a person who had two daughters. One daughter was terribly ugly, and another daughter spoke very, very inappropriately. She cursed and she didn't speak nicely. Nobody wanted to marry these two women. One day comes to a town a blind man and a deaf person. And the Shatran says this is a perfect shidduch. The blind person should marry the ugly girl. He won't be able to see that she's ugly anyway. And the deaf person should marry the woman who speaks inappropriately. He won't be able to hear her. And fine, the shidduch is done. Afterwards, a doctor comes to the city. And the doctor has tremendous abilities, and he's able to make the blind person see, and he's able to make the deaf person hear. The blind person now sees what an ugly wife he has. The deaf person now hears how inappropriately his wife is speaking. And they go to the doctor and they say, we don't have to pay you for your services. You didn't do us a favor. So they go to the Dentira. Do they or don't they have to pay the doctor? So the Rav says to the doctor, and can you reverse it? Make this person blind and make this person deaf again? He says, absolutely. So he says, so do it. So right away the blind person says, no, I don't want to be blind again. And the deaf person says, I don't want to be deaf again. So the Rav says, so obviously you are satisfied with what they did, and therefore pay. Here too, Al Karchak Atames. Nobody wants to die. We want to live. So obviously we're satisfied with the life that God gave us. If we're satisfied with the life that Hashem gives us, to us, elite and divichesbin, we should be careful how we live that life. So Gemara still tries to answer our question. Toshma. Habayis v'aliyah sheshnayim shenasbu. If there's a house, a lower floor is owned by one person, the upper story is owned by another person, and the house collapsed. Amar b'aliyah l'balabayis livnos. The person who lived in the upper story tells the person in the lower floor, let's rebuild a house. We ain't a roitza. Hare b'alabayis b'anabayis. So he wants a house, so the upper story owner built the first floor. The Yashba Achitin Litsyosif, he remains there until the person who owned the lower floor pays up. Yitsyosif Hud Mechayv Le Balabais. What do we see? He only has to pay for the expenses. Haskharoi, but rent is not deducted. Shmamina, Zenena, Vizelai Chasser. This is the situation of Zenena, Vizelai Chasser. The low owner of the ground story has not lost anything because he didn't want to rebuild the apartment, and it's Potter. Says the Gemara, there's no proof. Koshani Hosn the Baisal Aliyah Mishtabit. There, the ground story is under obligation to help the upper story rebuild his house. In fact, the Yerushalmi questions why he can't force him to pay. And the Yerushalmi suggests because he's not here that I could force him. Or others explain because his obligation is only limited to the property itself, not to other assets that he owns. So he can't bring a proof. So he might try a different proof. If somebody is living in somebody else's property, this is also a case, in the case of the upper story and the lower story, of somebody living on the premises of his friend without permission, and he does have to pay rent. Isn't this a proof from Rabbi Yehuda's opinion? Says the Gemara, there it's different. There, actually, the walls get black, and therefore the owner of the ground story does sustain a loss by the upper story living there, because his walls became blackened, and the apartment doesn't look new, and therefore we can't bring a proof. Says the Gemara, Shalchu bei Rav Ami, Oma v'chimas asuloi uma chisroi uma zikoi. If I live on your property, what have I done to you that I should have to, and you weren't intending on renting it, what have I done to you? Says the Gemara, let's think about it. How often are you going to send me the same question? She kept on asking the question because he didn't get an answer. If I would have gotten, or would have had an answer, wouldn't I have given it to you? The fact that I didn't answer you is because I don't have an answer at this point.